2.3 million people in America are in prisons and jails. That's the highest incarceration rate in the world. Politicians for decades have been tough on crime, but it's been against an increasingly overcrowded and understaffed system. What will the approach to crime and punishment be for the Obama administration? Joining us to add a few pages to America's briefing book for the next administration is Martin Horn, the commissioner of the Departments of Probation and Corrections for New York City, and also journalist Ted Conover, author of New Jack, Guarding Sing Sing, an account of nearly a year's work undercover as a corrections officer. Welcome to both of you here in the studio.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Martin, I'm going to start with you. What do you think the number one priority should be in addressing issues of crime and punishment?
Well, I think the number one priority always has to be justice. I think the new president has to recognize that crime control is primarily a state and local responsibility. I think that the new president should be very careful not to feed a frenzy that has led to this country's decades-long incarceration binge. I think that if the president pays attention to issues like jobs, to the social safety net issues, mental health, there's a real problem with prisons and jails becoming providers of mental health services. 30% of the people in prison and jail have mental health problems. We've deinstitutionalized the hospitals and not created the network of services in the community. And I think that to the extent the federal government promotes employment, promotes education, promotes employment opportunity, that will have a far greater impact than to feed some sort of national hysteria about crime.
And there certainly is a causal relationship between unemployment and the rates of crime. But let me ask you, Ted, about your experience inside the prison. And based on that, what would be your first thought of advice?
Well, there are a bunch of ways that we can reduce our reliance on incarceration, which is such a blunt instrument and so overused, I think. It represents a national failure of imagination in how to deal with crime. There are many things you can do to keep people from going to prison, and there are many things you can do to keep people who are let out of prison from coming back in, which is a major source of new prisoners. You know, when I worked at Sing Sing, I was just astonished by the number of young black men who arrived there from Rikers Island on drug charges, and they don't really seem to realize how long they're going to be there. That it's you see over the months, you see them change from sort of rowdy and wild to more somber and sober. I remember I walked with a kid, and he was a kid. I walked with him from the cell block where I worked to the package room one day. He'd gotten something, and he said, I said, so, you know, what are you in for? He said, it don't matter, CO. I'm going to be here till the sun burns out. And to see somebody 22 years old say that leaves a big impression. And you think, okay, what could we do? I'm sure he's done some bad things. He may have done some really bad things. But what can we do to, restore a sense of hope and possibility and mission to our prisons? And I think this budget crisis that's looming all over the country presents a great opportunity to think, how else could we spend this pile of money that we spend to lock people up? What could we do, and what could President Obama do in a sort of spiritual leadership role to restore an idea of doing something besides putting people in boxes for years and years?
And Martin, Ted brings up a really important point, which is people tend to forget the vast majority of people, men and women, who are imprisoned are going to get out.
That's right.
And there's been this enormous tidal wave of a shift from rehabilitation to punishment. How do we address those issues in a way that make it conducive for when those people do get out, that they have some sense there is a future that's possible that doesn't have anything to do with crime?
There's a growing movement in this country to change the outcomes. I think if we're serious about reducing our reliance on incarceration, we have to change the outcomes. And one of the things that the president can do very specifically is to support some federal legislation, something called the Second Chance Act, that has actually passed both houses of Congress. And I know that spending is going to be tight, but no funds have been appropriated for this program that would provide grants to states and localities to assist men and women who are leaving prison to find jobs, to obtain the services that they need to become productive and law-abiding citizens. And I think one of the things the president certainly can do is to encourage Congress to put forth a substantial appropriation, and then, of course, to sign the appropriation bill that includes that. There's also something called the Mentally Ill Offender Act, which likewise would provide grants to states and localities to keep the mentally ill in the community and out of jail, which is the right thing to do, and also to provide better services for them when they are confined. Nothing is sadder than a mentally ill person inside a prison or a jail. Let me just say that one of the most important things that the president, I think, should pay attention to is where he has primary responsibility is the Federal Bureau of Prisons, which incarcerates over 200,000 people. It's a very well-run organization, but it has grown tremendously. It's almost too big to be manageable. And it has grown as big as it has as a result of the tendency to federalize what have typically been state and
crimes,
local crimes.
Right. Particularly with regards to drugs.
Exactly. And now sex offenses. And it's an area that the federal government would be wise to stay out of. And certainly the president could avoid encumbering the federal budget further if he looked at that. And if he looked at the amount of time that people in federal prison are serving, the federal sentencing guidelines.
And these are enormous issues, and obviously we're sort of skimming the top. But Ted, you referred to some of the racial and class disparities. When you look at who is in prison, black men have a spectacularly higher likelihood of ending up in prison, as do black women, as do Latino men and women, and so on. How do you think we begin that discussion?
Well, I think even more than race, it's connected to poverty. And study after study has shown that most prisoners come from a very small number of neighborhoods. You know, New York State's prisons are filled with people from Brooklyn and the boroughs of New York City.
And parts of only parts of Brooklyn.
Marty's from Brooklyn, I know. I'm sure his neighborhood doesn't produce many at all. But
that's the point. It's just pockets within each borough.
Right, and there's an inmate I met who actually is from Brooklyn who said, Conover, you know, I know they're talking about adding more programs here at Sing Sing. I think that's wrong. I think that it's too late. I think it's too late for people who've come here. That money should go back to the neighborhoods. Instead of planning for the prison you're going to build in 20 years or the program you're going to do here, how about some money? This is a prisoner who didn't finish high school telling me, how about some money for Head Start? How about some money to keep families together, to do things to keep people from me, like me, from ending up here? And this is an even bigger picture, but there's no reason we can't think about it again now. What could we do to make life in those few neighborhoods produce fewer prisoners?
He's talking about New York. I'm going to, Martin, let you have the last word here.
I was going to say that Ted is entirely correct. I think we have to focus on the communities. That's where the true test of our ability to prevent crime and to help people become law-abiding citizens is going to occur. I think the other thing that we ought to pay attention to is where prisons are located. They should be located closer to the communities. There should be fewer of them. And we also should look about at the effect on voting. One of the things the president can influence is the Census Bureau's usual residence rule, which counts individuals in prisons as voters for redistricting purposes.
Which is actually a fascinating topic and one that we should certainly take on at the takeaway, because there are some communities that are entirely
precisely
made up of those
yes.
prison population. Gentlemen, can't thank you enough for coming into the studio here. That's Martin Horn, Commissioner of the Departments of Correction and Probation of the City of New York. Also Ted Conover, author of New Jack, Guarding Sing Sing, an account of nearly a year's work undercover as a corrections officer. And there we go.
All right. I'm Catherine Lanfer, in for John Hockenberry today. And I want to remind you that we are always on at The Takeaway.
These are the companies that are really at the heart of the crisis itself. The people who got us into this mess are now being paid to get us out of it.
That's Naomi Klein, who recently wrote an article comparing the use of private contractors to manage the bailout to how the early years of the Iraq War were managed. Take our podcast to go every morning. Subscribe now at thetakeaway.org or on iTunes.
I'm Catherine Lanfer.
And I'm Adora Udoji, and this is The Takeaway.